There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I'd like to talk to you about Draft. Draft.com, Draft in your app store. Great way to play daily fantasy sports. They started out with snake-style drafts just the way you like them. They're great because you don't have to worry about ownership. You're the only person that owns them. It's that simple. They start out as low as 3-man and 5-man, 7-man, 10-man, so on and so forth. They have baseball, basketball, football, golf. So much great stuff. The U.S. Open coming up this weekend. Get some golf draft in your life. And also best balls. They've mastered them. They've done baseball, basketball, and football. This will be year two of football, and they're rolling out the big ones. $25 entry up to $1 million winner over at draft.com. Draft in your app store. And if you're new to draft, use promo code SD Sports, SD as in dog sports, for a free $3 entry into a tournament of your choice. So go check out draft.com, draft in your app store, promo code SD Sports for a free $3 entry into a tournament of your choice. Also, thanks for listening to the podcast. As always, we really, really appreciate it. If you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd much, much appreciate that. It takes a couple minutes out of your day and would help me out a ton. Until then, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 178 with Matt Williams, talking week 11, TGFBI Fab, and much, much more. Everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 178. Got a special guest to recap the past week's fantasy baseball fab bidding and TGFBI. Talk about some recent news, as like usual, we have more injuries to discuss and some weekend performances. In order to do so, you can find him on Twitter at MattWI77IAMS. Matt Williams, how you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. Yeah, I got to have the sevens in my Twitter handle because I don't exactly have a unique name. So it's the best I could do without going with like Matt Williams, like 11175 or something.
No, I liked it. When I went to write it down, I'm like, that's good. I like that. Because like, yeah, otherwise you'd be the 45th Matt Williams or something. So yeah. I feel you.
Yeah,
there.
Oh, and I always get the, oh, you used to be a terrible manager. I also use, you know, and then I'll tell him about his San Francisco Giants days. Oh, yeah, you're a Giants fan. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Oh, I know. You know, if it wasn't a strike short in year, he might have been the home run champion.
Yeah, what did he have? Like 42 home runs at the break?
It was something crazy. It was something like astronomically dumb. And somehow, and you know, you never know in that era, he was never linked to any steroids at all. He was always a pretty small dude. He was bulky but small. So
phenomenal fielder.
Yeah, he's really good at third base. He had that just kind of weird, gritty attitude about him. I miss those days with Matty Williams and Candlestick Park and good times there with the Gigantes. But he might not have been the best manager, but now he's been a base coach for teams for about, you know, half a dozen years at least, if not longer. Seems to be doing well there. Maybe he'll find a managerial spot one of these days. Like, you know, we were talking about right before the show how bad some of the managers are around baseball. So there's got to be an opening somewhere sooner than later.
And the Nationals seems to be a cursed job. So at this point, who knows if it was even his fault?
Yeah, can you even grade it? Like, you got to grade it on a curve.
almost by now or something. Yeah. It can't all be his fault. Somehow Dusty Baker's looking good right now. Let's just put
it's like an ERA in the American League. You just got to add a few losses if you're a Nationals manager.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, before we get started on everything, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you? You have a ton of different things going on between baseball, football, your clip cast, all kinds of things.
Most of my work is at FF Statistics. That's, you know, for fantasy football, baseball. I write for Baseball Prospectus. I do the Turn 2 podcast, just at Turn 2 with Sam Lane. He was the Scott Fish champion, and he's a huge Cardinals fan. And I'm also the CFO of Clipcast. If you guys haven't heard of that, it's basically like the, let's say like the Google of podcasts. So if you just go to clipcast.app, you just type in anything you want to hear in a fantasy sports podcast. So you want to see, you know, Yordan Alvarez, you want to hear about any injury, you just type it right into the search bar and it'll bring up all of the most recent podcasts and of anything relevant of that player. And it'll just give you a short clip and you can even make a playlist so you can like do it on the go. And we actually have a full app coming to the App Store in a couple of weeks. So that'll be pretty awesome. I know this podcast is on there too, so you can search and find this on there as well.
Yep, this one, Around the Base with Bubba and Mo, are both on there. When football comes around, we'll get that one over there. But it's a great tool. It's a really cool tool, like that you mentioned, that if you want to just get info on one specific thing, and you just type it in and you figure it out, and it'll send you all the different options. And if you like the show, you keep listening. So it's a pretty cool deal that you guys are putting together. And that app will be super, super cool. Just to be able to do it on the run like that will be really, really nice.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. It's very cool.
You mentioned Yordan Alvarez. Let's start with Yordan Alvarez here in recent news. He finally gets the call, but for those who play in NFBC formats, TGFBI formats, not available yet because he's got to play a full game before Sunday. But in his first game, he hits a just absolute bomb to basically center, left center field, a shot in Houston. And he's been doing it all year long in the minor leagues. It's been iffy with prospects this year. Do they stick? Do they not stick? What's your opinion on Alvarez? Because, you know, everyone's could be right or wrong on this situation.
Well, a couple of things. One, I'm shocked it took him this long to call him up because of how the script has been flipped with Eloy Jimenez being signed early, with Alonso starting with the Mets completely without a deal, like just everyone getting brought up so quickly. The Astros obviously had a legitimate need for this guy with all their injuries. So I'm just stunned it took him this long, but I'm really excited. I mean, obviously he didn't start out the year being held as highly regarded as he was. He wasn't even obviously the number one outfielder. That was Kyle Tucker. But yeah, he's just been smoking the ball. I think at the end of, April, he was hitting like 354 with 12 home runs and like a 1300 OPS. I mean, this guy is, he just smashes. So, I mean, I'm psyched. I'm not sure, like you said, I'm not sure if he's going to stick, because I've been stunned by like when Nathaniel Lowe got sent down and obviously when Keston got sent down by Milwaukee. So in redraft, you know, obviously I don't know. I don't know. You have to be kind of patient. I am going to be picking anywhere I can. I've owned him for a while and I'm going to be holding on to him because I think he's going to be legit and keep it going the entire year. People always ask me, is he going to be like Juan Soto? Like, no one's like Juan Soto. Like, you just kind of have to throw stuff like that out the window. But this guy is really good, and I would expect him to definitely be worth owning and even like in 12-team mix the rest of the season.
Yeah, he should, on paper. Everything points to him being with the club for the rest of the year. Like, the fact they have him starting day one is a good sign for me. That shows that they brought him up to play him. We see too many prospects. They don't come up and they play all the time, and it's frustrating. But, you know, eventually George Springer will come back. He's kind of, you know, not progressing as fast as they hoped for. But you have Josh Reddick. You have Derek Fisher, who's actually playing well since the call-up. You have Michael Brantley. So many pieces in that outfield are playing well. So it'll be interesting to see how they put it together. I think they'll have to find someone. They'll need to find a way to trade, like, Tyler White. I think that'd be huge. So you just open up the DH spot, slide him on in, let it rock and roll. I think that's the key piece there, because Tyler White's out of options. So I think they're going to try to get something for him, and then they'll be able to rock and roll.
Yeah, the best advice I give anyone who's an Alvarez owner, if you're not sure, if you're nervous about him getting sent down when Altuve and Springer are finally back and they're running out of spots, is, you know, throw him on the block. But only trade him if you're getting a player you feel good about, like rest of the season, what you're expecting out of Alvarez. Like if someone else is really loving the hype, I'd go ahead and move him. But if you're not getting someone you're very happy with, I would definitely – he's worth the risk of just holding on to.
Well, let's have some fun with that then. Just for – like if someone's going to trade him, do you need like a Charlie Blackman type or is that too much?
Oh, no. Hold on. Are you talking Dynasty or Redraft?
Redraft.
No, I think – I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, I'd take that, but I would say you have to set your bar a little lower.
David Dahl.
Eddie Rosario.
Rosario. Okay.
I think I would. I mean, with the way rookies have been and the way rookies, you know, rookies are rookies. So, you know, he can get off to a hot start. I mean, look at Kyle Tucker, you know, I mean, everyone thought way higher of him than Alvarez when he came up and he just was, you know, that happens to rookies. Look at the way Vladimir Guerrero started. He obviously picked it up, but my God, he looked like he needed to go back to the minors at first, yep. Like rookies struggle. So yeah, if I could, I mean, I would say that's the lowest quality player I would take for him is like an Eddie Rosario. But I think if someone offered me that straight up in redraft, I think I'd take it.
Straight up in a redraft, would you trade him for Eloy Jimenez?
No.
Okay. That's what I was just wanting to see because Eloy is a very volatile person in our little realm of fantasy baseball. So you either love him or you're just really skeptical of him. So I think that's fair because he's been struggling. He's picked it up last week or so, but there's a lot of holes in that game right now that are getting picked apart. He's going to adjust and get
it together. It's not to say I wouldn't be interested in buying low, but I think you can buy him a lot lower than having to give up Jordan.
Good call. All right, let's go to the St. Louis Cardinals. Adam Wainwright left his start Sunday night with a hamstring tightness. He's going to go on the IL most likely. Just another hit to this Cardinals rotation. You know, Wainwright hasn't pitched great to begin with, but there's more and more holes opening up. Eventually, Alex Reyes is going to come back. You know, they tried Genesis Cabrera. That didn't work. They have Gomber down there who's pitching well, but he's hurt. So many things going on. How do you think how would you go about it if you're a fantasy owner with the Cardinals might do to replace Adam Wainwright?
I don't know.
Pure speculation.
They missed the biggest opportunity they had with Dallas Keuchel, along with the Yankees. They're probably both kicking themselves at this point, like days after he was signed. I don't know. I mean, Alex Reyes looks like he's on his way. They're giving him like, I think one more start in the minors before letting him have a shot here. I don't really know of anyone else I'd really trust unless we're talking about deeper formats with the Cardinals. I mean, Carlos Martinez obviously looks like he's just going to be sitting there in the bullpen for the rest of the season. So other than Alex Reyes, I'm just kind of staying clear of the situation.
Yeah, it's pretty rough and it's hard to see. Reyes is, like you said, the clear cut guy to go for. Maybe they'll make a trade because they're running out of options here. They had a deep system. They're just not panning out at the moment. Let's go to your New York Mets. Robinson Cano, he came back for about four innings from his injury. People thought he was lazying it out another double play ball. It turns out he hurt himself again. So
yeah, you can never tell with him.
No, you never can. I was literally watching it live going, you got to be kidding me. And then, yep, there he goes out of the game. But he's already going to start a rehab assignment potentially on Tuesday, it looks like. So they're rushing him right back into rehab, which seems like a total Mets thing to do when it comes to keeping players healthy. But what's your take on Cano? It's been a rough year, but it's so hard for people to kind of forget what he's done in the past and just kind of give up and move on from him.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing quite like rushing a guy back too early from the IL for him to get re-injured just to immediately rush him back from the IL. I am buying low on Cano everywhere for redraft because traditionally, I mean, maybe not as much recently, but traditionally this guy is a huge second half hitter. I mean, he hasn't started off this slow, but if you look at even his all-star years, he's gotten off to some pretty brutal starts. And just in general, like when it heats up, he does really well. And if you look what he did when he came back from his suspension last year, he didn't really look like he missed a beat. So, I mean, this is a guy you can obviously buy incredibly low on. I've seen him dropped in 12-team formats, so you can maybe even get him for free. So, yeah, if someone's completely given up on him and you're weak at second base, yeah, certainly take a shot. I mean, it's not going to take much of an investment. I would definitely take a shot on him just because of, you know, other than unless he just fell off an age cliff, it didn't look like when he came back again, when he came back from the PED suspension, he didn't look very affected last year, and he's a traditional second half guy. So, yeah, he looks like a easy buy low that you could, again, possibly even grab for darn near free.
Yeah, and you look at his X stats and everything on Baseball Savant and even his exit velocity and hard hit rates, and everything looks really, really good. So it's just not clicking with him right now. Eventually it might come together, or it's just like you said, he hit an age curve and this is kind of, it finally happens type deal and you move on. But so far, so good, and hopefully you can jump back on that one. Let's go to the Boston Red Sox. Nate Eovaldi suffers a setback. He was supposed to be rehabbing, potentially back by the 15th of June. And now that's obviously is not happening, as he's got a setback. They're hoping for early July, if not mid-July. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And, you know, you saw it and I saw it. A lot of people are grabbing Eovaldi the last few weeks to kind of stash him. If you're an Eovaldi owner, what are you doing with him right now? Because it's got to be kind of hard to kind of hope you're getting back what you hope you're getting back, at least in my opinion.
I know. I had Eovaldi. I had a lot of shares of him this year because I was waiting on pitching because I love stacking offense, and I felt that you can get a lot of really good value late, like guys like Eovaldi. Like, you know, you don't want to like lean on him too much, but I was grabbing a lot of similar players with risk, but I dropped him in pretty shallow leagues, and I have no real interest in picking him back up because, I mean, what is it now? He had Tommy John surgery twice. He's had to have bodies removed from his elbows each of the last two seasons. And now he has a setback with his bicep. I mean, I would expect him to continue to have setbacks all year just because he hasn't been healthy even for a second. If it's a deeper league and I could park him on my bench, then maybe I'll do a wait and see. But if I'm in a shallower format and I need, you know, and I actually need actionable spots, I'm not even going to waste a spot because, I mean, that's like, you know, like in the 12 team range. If we're somewhere in 15, I think you can park him on your team if you're desperate for pitching. But yeah, it's tough to really be too jazzed about what to expect out of Eovaldi going forward.
Yeah, it's rough. It's really, really rough. I know expectations were high, big postseason last year. It just hasn't panned out the way we all hoped it would. Let's go to the New York Yankees. Domingo Germán started out the season just outstanding. You know, before the season even started, they're like, okay, is it going to be him? Is it going to be Lasagna? Who's going to be starting? Domingo gets the job. He's pitched great. Last few starts been a little rough, and now he's on the IL with the hip flexor strain, which apparently he's been dealing with for a little while and never told the team. There goes that idea. But he's going to be out for at least 10 days. I don't think it's too serious, but do you have any concerns with Domingo Germán?
Not really. Like you said, he was pitching through it, so it didn't seem to be bothering too much. Yeah, the MRI actually came back today, and they said it looked perfect. So I'm not sure if he's going to be missing more than the 10 days. But even if he does, he's been pitching so well. I mean, I wouldn't be concerned. You just gotta wait through it. With all the injuries to pitchers this year, I think this is a pretty minor thing to worry about.
Yep, I'm with you there. Craig Kimbrel, we'll talk about both signings finally happening, right? When the draft occurred, of course. But Kimbrel gets about a 3-year, $42, $43 million deal with the Chicago Cubs, which to me was pretty insane. I thought if you waited this long, you'd just get a 1-year deal and test the market again. The fact the Cubs pulled this one off, A, tells you the system's broken because they were willing to give him a 3-year deal to begin with. But B, yes, he's there in Chicago now. Pedro Strop likely out of his job, and many others in that carousel we've seen in Chicago. What are your thoughts on Kimbrel and the rest of that bullpen?
Well, it's funny when you have that draft pick compensation attached to you, the second that date went by, all of a sudden you're signed. So, yeah, you said the system is most definitely broken. I don't know. I mean, I didn't want the Mets involved, you know, just – as a fan, when we were talking about Kimbrel, obviously he was asking for like $100 million at one point. That obviously did not happen. But I mean, his walks were up last season, like almost 4.5 per nine. And his career is, I think, around 3.4. His field independent pitching was like the highest of his career. So I mean, he looked obviously brutal in the postseason. So I don't know here. I mean, he's owned in all leagues. I haven't seen too many where he was ever sitting on the waiver wire. There's always, I mean, in all the leagues I'm in, he was literally owned and never dropped. So I'm not sure about picking him up. If I'm the Kimbrel owner, I'm actually going to probably take advantage of the wave before he even throws a pitch and trade him. Obviously, saves are worth money because I am kind of concerned. And I, in my opinion, just gut feeling, in the end, I'm not sure he's going to be that much better than Pedro Strop would have been for them. Maybe like a tick ahead. We've seen him do it, but I just seeing him pitch when we last saw him on the mound, he just doesn't seem like, you know, the same guy. He's now 31, I believe. And yeah, I'm kind of out.
Well, this will be interesting to see then. That's a hot take on Craig Kimbrel. Haven't heard a ton of those kind of takes there so far this year, but I don't blame you. He's been a little rough towards the last year. Take advantage of him while you can. I know I haven't been in a dynasty league. I had multiple people sending me offers right away to try to make that happen. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him – I mean, you're saying hot take. I wouldn't give him away. I'm just – if I hadn't been investing in him this year,
yeah.
So I'm not going out of my way to like acquire him. But I think right now there's a decent chance that there's someone, you know, who needs saves in your league that might be excited. And before he comes back, this is the time to trade him before he even throws a pitch, because you're trading him with the intention of him being good to the other owner. But, you know, do it now before he throws a pitch, because if he goes out there, gets lit up, comes back too soon, now's the time to try to move them, but only move them for full value.
Yeah, the reason why I called it a hot take is not many people are using that angle. It's a very good angle to use. Take advantage of it. Best your team somewhere else, because if you've been holding them this long, you're probably getting saved somewhere else, or you're already so far out of it. I don't know if Craig Kimbrel's going to help you. It's just one of those type deals. So help your team out where you can. So good move on there. Dallas Keuchel signs a one-year deal with the Atlanta Braves. He started for Gwinnett over the weekend. Couple more rehab starts. They're hoping to have him back here by the end of June, if not early July. You know, this is a guy that I really don't want anything to do with him right now. He kind of scares me. What's your take on Dallas Keuchel?
No, I'm with you. No way. The way the ball has been flying out of the park this year, I mean, Dallas is a very pitch-to-contact guy. Atlanta's defense is like among the worst in the entire league as well. I mean, two things that don't mix at all, along with the hard contact this year. I mean, it's adding up to a bloodbath possibly in his future. I'm not, there's better, probably better people on the waiver wire. If you really need a pitcher.
Let's go to Boston. Mitch Moreland goes back on the IL. He came back for one day. But unlike Robinson Cano, it's a different injury. He hurt his right quad strain. He's going to be out at least 10 days. The Red Sox are treading water. JD Martinez missed the weekend. He was back in the lineup tonight. But it's really interesting to see how they're going to piece this all together. Sam Travis is going to get some work at first base and a few others. Moreland was having a really good year. Are you concerned with these injuries, or are you just kind of let the time ride out and then throw him right back in your lineup?
I mean – It sounded like when he first got injured that this was going to be – they almost seemed like this was going to be like a long-term thing. In the last couple – just the last day, it seems like not as bad. But at minimum, he's going to be out a couple of weeks. So it's obviously not something you want to see, especially with a little bit of an older guy with those kind of injuries seem to linger. But there's not really much he can do. I mean, he was doing so well. You know, no one's trading for him. You can't. You're not cutting him, obviously. So you just kind of have to bear it and wait for him to come back. If, you know, if he has another setback, you can revisit this again. But for now, you just kind of have to take it and wait.
Yeah, it's hard to give up on a guy that's in an offense like the Red Sox and think when he comes back, he's going to be hitting in the middle of that order, and you really want to enjoy that in your fantasy lineup. So tough to give up there. Let's go to Tampa Bay. This one's kind of a somber one. Rays prospect Brent Honeywell, who many have been waiting to come back from Tommy John surgery, is rehabbing Tommy John surgery. Somehow he fractured a bone in his elbow. Not sure how that happens, but it was, they say, during while he was rehabbing and pitching, fractured a bone in his elbow, had to have surgery. His UCL for the Tommy John is totally fine, all the reports say. That's not an issue, so that's good. But he won't be pitching again until January of 2020. That's how long the rehab from the elbow is going to take. It's another setback for another great young prospect. Like, if you're in a dynasty league, I've had guys try to trade him to me. Would you be trying to acquire Brent Honeywell, or is it, you know, two surgeries is enough this time around?
I can't imagine the person that's dangling him in front of me is going to be offering me a price I'm happy with at the moment for Honeywell. I still believe in the talent. He appears to be snake bit. Some guys are just that way. None of these things are really related, the injuries. But I mean, he is so talented that, and this isn't like, you know, some people are like, oh, he's going to be out all next year. Like, that's not the case. He's going to be pitching again next year. So I would acquire him if the price was right. I mean, it's just all relative. But yeah, it's not a guy where I'm looking at this after the Tommy John and then the broken, the broken bone, and I'm thinking I'm all out. I mean, I'm still interested because, I mean, he before the first surgery, I mean, he was ready to come up and dominate. I mean, he's that kind of talent. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind trying to park him on a team, especially if I'm like rebuilding or like on a fringe team. I'd take a shot on him. Because like I said, this isn't like a setback of the Tommy John surgery. Like you said, his UCL is completely fine. So I would take a shot.
Yeah, because before this injury, there's a good chance he'd make a little bit of an appearance towards the end of this year, and that would have been huge. But, you know, now the fact that it's just the UCL is fine, he could be starting to throw again in January. There's a chance he even throws a little in spring training, and we might get him in April or May of next year. And that can be tremendous. Like you could, like you said, jump on that now, especially in a dynasty league. Have some fun with that and see where that goes, because you never know. He was close to returning. Like you said, he could have made an impact this season. And this setback sucks, but it's not going to – looks like not going to actually affect his pitching at all. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, I'll have to throw out the old I'm not a doctor on this one. Yes. But he's obviously not going to be able to – work out his tendons or like, you know, his muscles working his way back from Tommy John surgery. But he's going to be able to get a lot of extra rest that people typically don't from that, whether that helps him or not hurts him. I don't know, but it is an interesting thing because we obviously have never seen a guy that has been coming back from Tommy John surgery go out there and fracture his elbow. This will be a new medical phenomenon. We'll see if the extra time off helps him or not.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, I have no idea how he did this. It seemed like kind of out of the blue weird. So
yeah,
we'll see. Let's go to the Marlins, wrap up the news here. Caleb Smith, he was running the fantasy world, it felt like, for most of the season. Last few starts have been a little rough. The strikeouts aren't quite there, but he's been on the road. We've always said Caleb Smith's a much better home pitcher than road pitcher. Goes on the 10-day IL with inflammation in his hip. They called up Eliezer Hernandez for the Marlins. What's your concern level with Caleb Smith right now, besides between the injury and just the recent performance?
I think the time off couldn't really come at a better time. I mean, hopefully this was just the thing that was just giving him a little problem, and the rest will right the ship. Like you said, he gave up like 11 earned runs over his last 13 innings, gave up like six home runs in his last three starts. So maybe he's just having a problem really, going through his whole windup, and he just wasn't, his mechanics were off maybe because of the hip. So, I mean, he's been so good that, again, this is just kind of like I said with Mitch Moreland, you just have to sit and wait. I'm not too concerned from what it looks like that he was just dealing with a little bit of a hip issue that finally caused him to go out. So hopefully the rest will bring him back, because he was one of the best in the league with, 32.3% swing and miss rate, which is fantastic.
He was filthy.
Yeah, he was like fifth among qualified starters in strikeout rate at 31.5%. I mean, that is elite. So, let's hope he's fine, because, you know, he was a nice bright spot on the Marlins, maybe the only one. So hopefully he's okay.
Yeah, hopefully he's okay, and they can move on from this, because it was pretty impressive. I heard a stat. I'm not going to steal it. It was from the Fireside Chat with Paul Skor and Nick Pollock last week. Before the Caleb Smith injury, they were the only team in baseball to use only 5 starting pitchers this year out of all the teams, the Miami Marlins. That's pretty crazy. Never would have guessed that one. If anybody, maybe do it for life or death, would have lost that bet. But let's go to some weekend performances here. Jay Bruce, I didn't mean to rub this in. This was just part of the deal. But he's come over to Philadelphia, and he is rolling. Over the weekend, a couple, an 0-for-3 on Sunday, a 1-for-4 on Saturday. But he's hit safely in 5 of 6 games. He has 4 home runs, absolutely crushing it. We know Bruce is a streaky guy, but really loving it in Philly so far. If Bruce is available, obviously you're probably going to want to grab him, and he should be grabbed by now. But what's your kind of outlook on Jay Bruce as a guy that's watched him enough in New York? Are you ready for the ups and downs, or is this maybe a different Jay Bruce right now?
No, I don't actually think it. I don't think it's a different Jay Bruce at all. As a Mets fan, I was very upset when he was just tossed into the Robinson Cano deal as an afterthought for salary, because that's what we're dealing with now as Mets fans, salary relief. the big issue he had the last 2 years was not an age issue or anything. He had plantar fasciitis, which was totally robbing him of his power. That was entirely it. And he finally had enough rest for that to heal. And now he's just back to being Jay Bruce. He's going to be streaky, but the power is going to be there. What you're seeing now is exactly what he is. He's hitting 235 with 18 home runs. That's Jay Bruce. And now that he's in Philly, I mean, yeah, that's tremendous. If anyone in your league is thinking that this is some kind of fluke and they're trying to like sell high, I would check in. I'd buy high on him, depending on the return, obviously. But I mean, I'm expecting exactly what he's doing to continue going forward. Typical Jay Bruce stuff, low batting average, incredible power, which should see a much, you know, a nice uptick in Philadelphia, which we've already seen home run in his first four games.
Yep, he's loving it there. Let's go to Arizona. We don't have to, we can kind of wherever you want to go talking players on this one, but they went in Toronto and they cleaned house. They swept them, put up a ton of runs. Kevin Cron was there. They needed the DH. He's not in the lineup tonight in Philadelphia, so it pretty much tells you what that was all about. But he homered in two out of three games. Ketel Marte, David Peralta's back hitting homers. You know, even tonight they let off back-to-back-to-back homers to start the game in Philadelphia. So the D-backs' bats are hot. Are we believing in them the rest of the year? Or is this kind of a flash in the pan and maybe the humidor takes over? I don't know. The juice ball changed everything. But are we believing in the Diamondbacks right now?
I am not particularly believing in the Diamondbacks as a whole. They obviously have some really good players on there. I love Christian Walker. I loved him preseason. So I really believe in him, and obviously so do the Diamondbacks, which is the main issue Kevin Cron's going to have. I wish they could try to squeeze him into that lineup there. But, you know, I just don't know where he's going to go. Hopefully they'll give him more opportunities, which will allow him a chance to get in there. But no, not really. The rest of the team, I think this is just kind of just a general hot streak. I mean, even the Marlins look like the 27 Yankees there for a couple of days. So I think this is just, you know, a hot streak. They're in general, they're going to kind of go back to being what they were this little offensive outburst.
Yeah, hitting in Toronto can help once in a while. That's a very hitter-friendly ballpark there. Yeah. Let's talk about a team that struggled over the weekend. Whenever you see the Baltimore Orioles on your schedule, and you see that pitching staff and that bullpen, you're thinking offensive bonanza. We've seen some bad teams score a lot of runs. The Orioles went into Houston. Dylan Bundy pitched very well, and the rest of the team didn't pitch bad. I think one game the Astros scored like four runs. Overall, very low key. And I know that we already said earlier, missing Correa, missing Altuve, missing Springer, but he still has a really good core there of players that are playing well right now. Are you concerned with the Houston Astros at all?
Well, not really. It's the thing about baseball. Anyone, even the absolute worst team is still going to win like, you know, 60 games. Michael Brantley's hitting 317, Reddick 312. I'm just looking down here. Springer's obviously hurt. Correa 295. Bregman's having a great year, 18 home runs, batting 272. I mean, they're all doing fine. Altuve wasn't doing too well. He's still, you know, still injured, but I'm expecting them to be fine. And with Yordan coming up, hopefully we'll get him going a little bit, but I'm not worried about any of them. I don't think this isn't a thing where I think you can buy low on anyone either, because the, you know, people just look at the season lines and none of them are really bad. If you just look at the lines for the whole year, they're kind of doing okay. Other than stolen bases, they're like, I'm not sure. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they have to be one of the worst teams in all of baseball stealing bases.
Yeah, no. I remember when they brought Straw up, everybody thought they'd steal a bunch of bags. They're still not stealing any bases. So
yeah, I think he might lead. I think Straw may lead the team in stolen bases. If he's not, he's like one. Well, no, I'm not even joking. I'm gonna look.
No, I believe you. That's why I was chuckling. That just tells you how bad they were.
Yeah, he has three. The team lead is four with Springer.
Jeez, that tells you a lot right there.
Yeah,
that is not good. Not good at all. Let's talk about Lucas Giolito. This guy wants a top prospect. I've talked about him so many times on the podcast. I know everyone else has, but it's like every time he comes and starts, it's another just, wow, this is like happening right now. Lucas Giolito's dealing again over the weekend, 7 2/3 shutout innings with 11 Ks against the Royals. Yes, it's the Royals, but still, you got to respect him. He's got at least 7 1/3 and four straight starts, giving up only three runs and one starts, others three shutouts, 9 or more Ks in all four starts. He's got a 2.28 ERA and a 3.56 xFIP. most things pan out right now, is Lucas Giolito a must start? I'm not going to say ace is the right word, but a must start upper echelon starting pitcher from this point forward.
Yes, and I will. I am going to call him an ace.
I'm not going to fight that one at all.
I love what I'm seeing, and not all these. Yeah, these. I mean, he completely destroyed the Astros in Houston. These aren't all layups that he's been laying out. I mentioned earlier in the show with like Eovaldi, I had certain guys that I was just collecting this like certain tier of pitchers. I love Mike Minor preseason. That's worked out great. I love Giolito because of the stuff he has shown at the end of the year, and I thought it would go really well into the season. Obviously started horribly. So wherever I didn't have him, I bought low and grabbed him. So I have him everywhere. And this, I mean, there's plenty of things, you know, I missed on. this is one of the guys I was very happy to have. So grain of salt, I was already high on him coming into the season. So I'm now being like almost spoon fed what I was hoping to see. So I'm more likely to believe it. But looking at Brooks baseball, looking at every statistic you can, I mean, it's all legitimate. And what I always like to tell people, this was JD Martinez is my best example. When I remember arguing, whether people thought his comeback, remember, because he was like people thought he was a failed prospect and then he got traded up and people were wondering when he went to Detroit, like, is this legitimate? And I said, well, he was supposed to be this good. It's kind of easy for me to believe, which is kind of, I feel with Lucas Giolito, you start your career off real bad. Sometimes it just takes a guy a while to get it going. So he was supposed to be this dominant. He really was when he, you know, came up with Washington. So there's nothing fluky going on here. This is not like a weird thing we're seeing, like, oh, can this guy keep this up? This is the level we were hoping to see when he was brought up, and now he's delivering. So if especially eye test, mechanics, velocity, everything looks good. So there's no reason for me to believe that this won't continue.
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you. I have nothing pretty much to add to that, except it just goes to show the point that, you know, sometimes prospects just take more time to develop. I've said that a few times. He was the number one pick in a draft. Like, we see it with Dansby Swanson right now. He was the number one pick. People are writing him off. And, you know, he's not an elite player, but he's playing really, really good. And he's like a top 15, if not top 10, depending on how you want to break it down categorically, shortstop in baseball right now. Some of these guys just take time. And that's why I'm really curious. And it might be taking more time. And it doesn't happen for everybody. But in that same deal for Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, he shows you glimmers at times, and then he just blows up. I'm not saying he's Lucas Giolito, but this reminds me of Giolito the last couple of years. Is, you know, are we maybe going to see Ronaldo? I'm not saying by any means add him and pitch him every night. No. Like, he's a good DFS punt play a lot. That's about it. But it's something to keep in mind. Like, these guys take time to develop. Like you said, JD Martinez, for a team where the Astros, we talk about how great they are at player development, they screwed that one up. That one was them. Like, he could be there with Springer and Correa right now doing his thing. So lots of ways to look at it. That's a great point. Giolito was an upper echelon talent, and we're finally seeing it develop. If it was the new pitching coaches or what it was, it all clicked. The pitch mix changed, and voila, there we go. So I'm with you. I think he's an ace. A follower on Twitter asked me and a couple other guys, you know, gave us five pitchers of the week. I need to sit two. And one guy said, sit Giolito. And I was like, whoa, what? like, because they're facing the Yankees. But I think Giolito's the guy you start every day now. You just start him and you rock and roll, because more often than not, it's going to pay off in a big, big way.
Yep. I mean, certain guys, there's like, for example, I'll start Giolito every single day. Jack Flaherty, he's on my bench versus the Cubs tonight. I mean, a lot of people will say that's maybe insane, but kind of worrying the crap out of me. But Giolito, I mean, if he's at Yankee Stadium, I'm starting him.
Yeah, Giolito Flaherty is scary right now. I don't blame you for that one at all. There's concern in my book. I'm not a pitching guru by any means, but I'm not liking everything I'm seeing there. There is some definite levels of concern, and we'll have to get that broken down on maybe get Nick Pollock or someone that has all those deep deals to explain to us what's going on, because it's not good. Not good at all. Let's go to the Philadelphia Phillies. Nick Pivetta, everyone went into the season. You know, you mentioned Giolito, there was the Beavers and all these kind of that level of pitchers that people wanted to gamble on. Pivetta was one of the culprits, the lead man in that brigade, and he got torched to start the season. It wasn't pretty. Home runs, walks, it was bad. Gets sent down to the minors, gets his head right, and you're still kind of walking guys, they're still concerned. Comes up in his first start, 3 earned in 5 innings, 2 walks. But since then, and this is big, at the Dodgers, 6 shutout innings, no walks, 9 Ks. And then he throws a complete game, 9 innings, 1 earned, 6 Ks, again, no walks against the Cincinnati Reds. Back-to-back, just phenomenal starts from Pivetta on the season. Now a 4.93 ERA and a 3.81 xFIP. Are we buying into this Pivetta? Is this the guy we hope we get, and you think it's here to stay?
See, this is tricky because everyone was really in on him preseason, and there was a lot to like. But the big red flag with him was always the home runs and the fact that he pitched in Philadelphia didn't do him any favors. Since his hot streak here, he has not given up a home run. You can call that, 0% home run to fly ball ratio. He's given up zero home runs. But his actual hard contact rate that he's been giving up is higher, way higher. Like when he was getting torched, it was sitting at like 25-35%. Right now, in June, it's at 48%. And people are hitting the ball very hard against him. They're just not going in the air. His fly ball percentage is down to like 18%. He was chucking around 30% the beginning of the year in May. It was like 60%. So the walks aren't really the thing that concern me. It's just him giving up the long ball, which he's not right now. Yeah, I would be interested because he's a guy where if he managed to fix that, like he threw the ball lower in the zone, like they actually worked on something that he could all of a sudden become amazing. So I would be interested in investing in him, because especially if anyone looks at his year long stat line, they're going to see some ugly numbers. But yeah, he's did some good things against some good teams. I'm not sold on him, but there's enough there to see that if he actually has made and turned the corner, he could have gone to bust to amazing like really quickly because he just had that one really big Achilles heel. And if he managed to fix it, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued. I know he was a popular pickup over the past week, but that's in 15 teamers. He still might be available in 12 teamers. And I like to get on him now. You don't have to start him right away, but I grab him just in case this is for real because he was so close last year. You listen to all the guys that talk about all the advanced metrics and everything, and people were claiming, he's the next Aaron Nola, and we'd see how that's working this year for Nola. But Pivetta was close. Like you said, not giving up the home runs is huge. He's not walking guys. If he can keep stringing this together, and he's going to have a few blows because pitching in that ballpark is not going to be easy all year round. But it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to also downplay the walks. That is huge, especially for a guy who gives up home runs, because even if you are giving up home runs, if you limit the walks, you're obviously not going to have the gigantic blow-up innings. So, he doesn't even need to be as great as he's been to be amazing. He just needs to, temper down both of those things, and he's doing really great at both. So I'm with you.
Yeah, it's a good point with, the home runs. You can give up solo homers. Ask Max Scherzer. Ask Garrett Cole. Ask Justin Verlander. They almost give up over a home run a game. That's just what they do. But they don't walk anybody. So the solo homers don't kill you. And you can make that work. So good point with that. Let's go to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Speaking of Garrett Cole, part of the Garrett Cole trade from Houston to Pittsburgh was Colin Moran. Many thought there's no chance this is going to be, worth anything. And for the most part, it's been very, hit or miss with Colin. Nothing great, but he was an okay prospect. There was pedigree there. Just hasn't panned out. I'm not saying this is the same conversation we just had about Lucas Giolito, but there might be something here. Over the last 11 games, it's safely a 9 of 11, hitting 300 over that span with 5 home runs. He's looked very, very good. I know there's the full season package, but maybe he's starting to get it going here. He was a pickup in deep leagues this past week. Are you looking at a guy like Colin Moran? Does he interest you at all?
Not particularly. I've taken a closer look since he started, the statistics have started looking better for him. And it looks like he seems to be getting just a little bit lucky. Nothing really different in his approach. He's not, as far as exit velocity, hard contact percentage, nothing is really changing. He's not hitting less ground balls. He's still hitting around 45%, which is just around where he's been. He's actually his line drive rate has gone down from between 20-30% down to 10%. So he's putting the ball up in the air more, but it's not there's nothing in his launch angle to suggest he's changing anything. So I think he's just been getting a little lucky with the long ball, and nothing has particularly changed. So Yeah, it is not a guy I'd go out and shop for, because I didn't really see anything he's changing mechanically or by approach to suggest that he's actually turned anything around.
Okay, something to monitor for sure. But yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere. Very hot streak, but it'll be curious to see if it continues. Cesar Puello making his impact with the Anaheim Angels right now. He's been all over baseball in the minors. Finally getting his chance, I guess. He's played 8 games so far, hitting .452 with 3 home runs. He went 5 for 9 on Saturday and Sunday with a home run. Playing well, showing some upside. A former Mets farmhand. What's your take on Cesar Puello right now?
Oh, he was supposed to be a very good hitter. At one point he was like a top 5 prospect for the Mets. Right there with like Michael Fulmer at one point. He got cut or released. I think he was released by the Mets due to a PED suspension. But, I remember the scouting report on him was he's supposed to be like a nice, almost 5 tool talent, where he'd just be a really nice outfielder who could, had some speed and would hit like maybe 20, 25 home runs. And I haven't really followed him since we released him. Honestly, I didn't think I'd see him again. And all of a sudden, he attaches on here. I see him brought up and everything I see looks really solid. Just the same kind of prospect that he was supposed to be. He's got a really strong arm and he's definitely a decent enough fielder where that's going to give him an edge to staying some games. He looks good, and he's someone who I would pick up if I had some space in deeper formats, because he is a guy where I wouldn't be surprised if he just all of a sudden just became like a really solid hitter.
Yeah, you look at a team like the Anaheim Angels, there's not a ton of people that are going to hold him back if he's hitting. There's nothing to really block me. Cole Calhoun, yeah, Mike Trout, there's that revolving door in the rest of the outfield. So there's definitely playing time for him there. You can always, DH and Shohei Ohtani's not DH, and there's ways to get him in the lineup and make it work. So you're very interested to see how Puello pans out there. Last but not least here, Nelson Cruz, scuffled a little bit to start the year, was on the IL. People are getting concerned. I don't know why they were. Nelson Cruz does Nelson Cruz things. And since his return from the IL, he's hit 4 home runs. He's hit safely in 4 straight games with 4 home runs, hitting .412. Looks like he's back to me, Matt. What's your thoughts on Nelson Cruz?
Yeah, I can't really add too much. I'm going to believe in him until he's dead. Yep. He's
the most consistent guy out there.
Yeah. Is the age cliff coming? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, nothing suggests it other than like logic, but there's nothing in the numbers that suggests this guy isn't going to hit home runs. I think that this guy is going to like hit 35 home runs 1 year and then retire. And then we'll all be sitting there wondering, like, when he doesn't get into the Hall of Fame because of PEDs, like, wow, he probably could have played a little longer. He retired when he had 35 home runs. This guy's going to retire exactly the player he is right now, probably.
Yeah, no, it's just crazy what he does. It's like you just pencil him in. And the argument, people trying to talk down about him in draft seasons, well, he's only util only. Well, then fine. Play him a util and take 35 home runs. I don't see what the problem is with this.
But, yeah, I know. It's like, oh no, you got to get 35 home runs. I'm like, who else are you going to put there? Put him there.
Yeah, he doesn't even kill your average. Like, he's so darn good. It's pretty impressive there. Let's do our weekly FAB report, looking at the TGFBI FAB list from Smata. Gives you all the ads for each league, tells you who got them for the prices, so on and so forth. As usual, it's just kind of the popular ads, ones that kind of stand out that people might want to know about. Matt, last week on my show, we talked about Adrian Sampson because he had another big start over the weekend. Well, this week he gets picked up as low as $11 to Yancey Eaton in League 20 to as high as $135 to Greg Smith in my league in League 2. So all over the spectrum of ads, and Sampson's been pretty good of late. It is in Texas, which is always scary, but he's been usable. Are you buying into Adrian Sampson right now?
Not to the degree a couple of these people are, I think you got to take your shot. I mean, it depends on how you spent your FAB to this point. If you're someone who had missed out on other people, I think I can kind of understand being aggressive with him. Especially with the way injuries have been with pitching this year, I mean, you got to take your shot. So I don't really feel strongly about him, but I have no issue with picking him up at most of these levels. See, they're in like around the 20 to 30 range, which is completely reasonable. But yeah, I mean, if I did, my gut feeling is he's probably going to fade. But yeah, I have no issue with the money being spent on him, because you know there's just not a whole lot available in these format.
Yep, and we'll see him added. If he wasn't added this past week, he'll be added everywhere else, because I believe he's a 2-start guy next week. So
yep,
we'll see that happen in there. Animal Sanchez was a 2-start guy this week. His 2 starts from returning from the IL. He's been very, very good. A lot more like the Animal of last year that people were drafting. Do you believe maybe that IL stint, he figured some things out, and now we're going to get that good Animal? Or is this kind of a pipe dream and people either just cross their fingers that this week doesn't kill them?
No, I had actually picked him up the week before, just because you know you got to try to stay ahead. Either you know, if you don't, you're all of a sudden paying $135 for Adrian Sampson. But Anibal Sanchez, yeah, I believe in him more than I do Sampson. For example, I think that he's a veteran pitcher who very easily could just outthink his issues, and you know we saw how good he could have been last year, so. Yeah, I'd be pretty happy if I got him at some of the prices I'm seeing here, if you waited. So he could end up being a really big bargain.
No doubt about it. We already talked about Colin Moran, just so people won't know him, for anywhere from $1 in League 3 to $88 in League 13. Let's go to Delino DeShields Jr. He went for $1 in 2 leagues, in League 7 and League 18, as high as 44 to Yancey Eaton in League 20. Yancey's been a popular guy here. But DeShields getting everyday playing time right now with Calhoun hurt and whatnot. He's stealing bags, making that happen. What's your thoughts on Delino DeShields right now?
I don't see the playing time really lasting, just because I think he's had more than enough opportunity to prove himself, and I don't think he's going to stick as a major leaguer really. And once all the Rangers are healthy, he's going to kind of go back to a reserve role. So for this season, like, you know, just redraft, I wouldn't be too excited. But, you know, because of the tools he possesses, in case he does stick, because there's no guarantee that anyone, you know, he doesn't keep the job, that I can see spending the amounts that we see. Because it's all team in this format, it's all team needs. If you really need some speed, then, you know, you just kind of go for broke and you gotta grab your guy. But I personally wouldn't be too excited about him.
All right. Framber Valdez, $6 in League 9 to Corey Steiner, and League 6 to Troy Clowder, up to 88 for Heath Capps in the Champions League, League 1. So all over the board. But Framber, we know he had his starts last year. He was very up and down. He threw 7 innings, 1 earned, 7 Ks against Baltimore this weekend. And he was pretty good overall on the season, 2.73 ERA. Lots to like there. Are you buying into Framber Valdez for the time being, or just kind of a spot start time week-to-week thing?
I'm buying in a little bit. I have him probably of the three pitchers we talked about. I have Anibal first, and then Framber, and then Sampson. Yeah, nothing I'd be too excited about. It's just the landscape of there's so many pitchers that are injured that you got to take a shot on these guys. But I don't really have anything specifically I'm excited about. I mean, sorry, folks, I don't have any dynamite breakdown on Framber Valdez. What you see is what you get with him. He's pitching a little above his head, but I think he could still be plenty valuable enough to start with the amount of if you take a look at what, like, you know, some teams are starting, he's a perfectly usable option. So. Yeah. I love these numbers, though. I never took a look at like what every single other team was spending. It's fascinating looking at.
That's why I do this every Monday. I give every guest this list. I said, let's just go through and talk, because it's such a wide array. Like, man, the week we had Fab again with all the prospects, the differences in bidding. Some guys went for like $30, and the same guy in a different league went for like $450. It's crazy.
It's funny because obviously Dallas Keuchel was owned in every single league except for one, where he appears to have gone for $262. So I guess that's the one league he was not owned in.
Yeah, that would be the guess. That he just – there you go, folks. There's Dallas. League 8 to Cliff Gannick. And then it shows you the difference. So the runner-up bid was $76 cheaper. So it shows you how much you did the difference there. Let's go to Freddie Peralta. This can be a quickie. We've done this song and dance with Freddie last year. We've done it this year. He went from anywhere from $1 to $49. He pitched really well his last time out. This dude is one of the most inconsistent, talented pitchers I've seen. are you a guy that's willing to roll that dice with Freddie Peralta time in and time out? Because he can destroy a fantasy team, or he can make it like huge in 1 week. It depends if you hit it just right.
I can't see myself going there, because the thing with Freddie Peralta is, like you said, he has all the talent in the world to no hit anyone, but you can't really trust to stream him because he has the ability to get lit up by anyone. You can't just like not start him against the Dodgers and then start him against the Royals, because the Royals have a decent chance of destroying this guy. So that's kind of why I can't really get behind Peralta, because you just can't really trust him on a daily basis, no matter who he's facing.
Yeah, when you throw as many fastballs as Peralta does, it's not a good recipe for success. It just really isn't. So I'd be interested to see how it works. Like I said, he can be really great at times and just really, really disastrous. Just a couple more, as it wasn't a huge fab week. I just want to get your thoughts on it. It could be Cliff Notes versions, whatever works for you. But Garrett Cooper, he was picked up a lot last week, went a few more leagues this week, as low as $16 to Tom Pringle in League 4, to as high as $112 to Brian Ambos in League 15. And if Brian's curious, the runner-up bid was $11. So good on you. But
maybe he meant $12.
Yeah, accidentally left that one that was already in there. Hey, I almost did that the other day. I understand that one completely. But Garrett Cooper's been pretty good on the season, hitting .281 with 5 homers, but been really, really hot of late. To you, and you never know with the Marlins, like you said, they've been world beaters of late. But in your opinion, is this just the Marlins are hot right now, or is Garrett Cooper actually maybe legit? Like in five outfielder leagues, does he have a spot on a roster?
I don't know if he definitely – I mean, I would say this, that he I wouldn't say he has a spot on a roster in a five outfielder league, in terms of he should definitely be in your outfield, but there is always one team in a league that could use him. So I guess in that terms, I'll say yes. There should be a team in a league that could use him. So I really like the buy here, because he's definitely probably guaranteed playing time on that team the way he's hitting. So you can, someone you can pencil in every day. So the kind of power he's capable of with every day at bats, that kind of stuff's just not available on the waiver wire. So I could see him, playing decent for the rest of the year. So I think it's a pretty good buy.
Yep, no problem with that at all. I like him quite a bit. We don't have to talk about these guys unless the name stands out to you, but like Ian Kennedy got grabbed in about 7 leagues. Jacoby Jones picked up. He double-donged on Sunday. He got picked up in a handful of leagues. Mitch Keller, who we've seen pitch for Pittsburgh, he got picked up in about 7 leagues. Roberto Perez, catcher for the Indians, got grabbed in about 8 leagues. Anything ring a bell with those guys, or just kind of slow week, filling up your roster type stuff?
Now, Mitch Keller is interesting. He's obviously supposed to be a stud. He was just getting just annihilated in the minor leagues. So, I mean, I would say he's probably not ready a long term. So, I mean, but, in a certain situation, when a guy like that is going to be pitching, you have to take your shot. Nothing really. I don't have an issue with any of this stuff. I think I do love the bottom of the list, Zach Plesac. I guess a couple of the people weren't totally sold on him. This is what happens. You always say 56, 72, 150. You got to be aggressive here. You got to be aggressive, guys. If you see a guy you like, especially if you're willing to pay some of these prices I'm seeing for fringe guys, if you're willing to pay up, try to look ahead and grab these guys for cheap.
Yep, no doubt about it. And that's what I kind of like. Otherwise, like you said, you get in this bidding war where it gets really, really ugly. Really, really ugly. And then if it doesn't pan out, you feel even worse. If you just get the small bid and it doesn't pan out, so be it. That's the name of the game. And the other reason I like doing this exercise is there is no exact science to FAB. Like, there were leagues that I've lost bids on players that I would have won in, like, 90% of the other leagues. It's just, there's no rhyme or reason, but it's fun to chat about and kind of get a feeling on it all and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, you definitely can't argue it because, it's league by league. You don't know their situation. You don't know their team situation, the league situation. You don't know what's, like you said, Dallas Keuchel would have gone for a lot, but he was owned everywhere. He wasn't owned in this one particular league for some reason. He ends up going for like so much. Alex Reyes went for $101, obviously the only league he wasn't owned in. So it just depends on your league.
Yep, exactly. It's pretty crazy stuff. But Matt, that'll wrap us up for this week. This episode, it was great getting to know you and chat with you on this. Before we leave, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you and what you got coming up?
You can find me on Twitter at Matt Williams, MattWiims. Right now, I am just doing the Turn 2 podcast with Sam Lane for baseball. Otherwise, I'm wrapped up in FF Statistics, getting ready for fantasy football. So, I mean, check out the site. If you're into fantasy football, check out ffstatistics.com. We have some pretty crazy stuff going on. We also, our amazing graphics team put together this video of like the Thanos snap from Avengers, like getting rid of our old logo and introducing our new one, like through a portal. It's like really, it's badass. You guys should check it out.
I'll have to check that out. And I'm a baseball guy through and through, but I do fantasy football. And Bench with Bubba will become fantasy football here pretty soon. It'll still stay baseball two times a week, but I'm going to start putting football in. So I might have to have you back on before the season starts and chat it up a little bit on that. But Matt, thanks for joining me, man. A lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No problem, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 178 with Matt Williams. Talking some fantasy baseball, week 11 fab, and much, much more. Catch you guys later.
This is Sean Grain from the Sports Gambling Podcast, and in case you didn't know, the show you're listening to right now, as well as my show, the Sports Gambling Podcast, is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Blue Wire was founded in 2018 on the concept that independent podcasts would be more successful if they worked together. Today, Blue Wire has grown to feature 300 shows led by former athletes, media professionals, and passionate fans, plus guys like me who just love betting on sports. Over the past few years, Blue Wire has privately raised over $10 million to expand their team, podcast network, and business operations. Now they are raising another round on WeFunder. WeFunder is a crowdfunding source that connects startups with investors. It's a cool platform that gives everyone the opportunity to be part of a growing startup. You can invest for as little as $100. In other words, you don't have to be a millionaire to invest in cool companies on WeFunder. I can vouch for Sports Gambling Podcast and our Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Our partnership with Blue Wire has really been vital to us growing. Kevin and his team do tremendous work over there. So Blue Wire is raising money to expand their sales team and improve operations, which in turn will help this show and many like them continue to grow. If you'd like to be part of the Blue Wire investment round or want to find out more information, go to WeFunder.com/BlueWire.